This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you all for coming today. It's my delight to consider board topics. The other day, I was in to see my brother at our local nursing home, sponsored by various Mennonite churches. I go in about every day, and I get to be on a first-name basis with the caregivers there, and I enjoy that. And as I come in, they're always friendly to me and all. And, you know, the other day it hit me that I don't even know who all's on the board. I know a few of them. I probably, if I'd look at the list or somebody would give me the list, would know a lot of them, but probably not even all of them. And it just illustrates to me that board members often serve behind the scenes, and it's a vital role, a little like the human heart, depended on. If the board misfires and doesn't function well, you know, people are going to discover it. The staff's going to be upset or leaving or whatever. And things can happen that call attention to the board and board mismanagement or board misdirection. But it's a crucial role that if you're on a board or if you're serving with a board, it is good to just take a look at some of the things that are involved with board membership and responsibility. Because governing an organization that serves the needs of many people and sometimes communities, many communities, is typically placed into the hands of a board of directors. Their investment of wisdom, time, money, and thoughtful oversight has implications far beyond any one single meeting. The decisions a board makes today have value and impact for years to come. So one might ask, what is the role of the board? I suppose if I were to ask you, you would soon be able to help me with some of them. Let's just advance the slide and see how this helps. Governance is giving guidance to an organization and exercising stewardship of it. Have you thought of that kind of it? A definition, giving guidance to an organization and exercising stewardship of it. Guidance and stewardship are two different things. So when we talk about the board of directors, we're talking about that concept. They govern, they direct. And when we talk about exercising stewardship, we're talking about a function of being a trustee, like a board of trustees, another good term. And when we think about exercising stewardship of an organization, it actually goes two ways, two different sides of accountability. So exercising stewardship over an organization and its assets, its resources, people, and assets, is taking responsibility to provide for and oversee. And exercising stewardship of it also means that we are underneath God and the government and our constituency that we serve, the community that we serve. So there's an interesting interplay here that helps us to understand the special position that we have as board members and helps us to understand that there's some beef to this. This isn't just my turn now to sit in a chair. There's a responsibility here that involves a number of things. Let's look at some of those things. So, in the first place, governance is exercising spiritual discernment to discover God's will for the organization. And you've got it all printed out here. But I'd like to just have us think as we go piece by piece about this spiritual discernment. I trust that Christian nonprofits start their meetings with prayer, and that when they wrestle with a what shall we do, that they pause for prayer. But in all of this, whether in prayer actively or not, exercising spiritual discernment is important. And to establish the mission, vision, and values, we often realize that this is central, that we come back to this to help guide us in the establishment of our policies, to hire, support, and evaluate the administrator. These are things that the board is positioned to take care of. And if we can cooperate, if we can tend to our administrators and nurture them, hopefully they will stay longer. But we might also need at times to find the replacement. Set policies and oversee programs. Probably we think of this very often as we think of board responsibilities, to set policies, to secure finances and protect assets. It's still true that board members are legally responsible and accountable for assets, for the financial success of an organization. And so it's not fitting for you to sit on a board and say, I don't care about those financial statements. What I'm really passionate about and what I'm going to pay my attention to is the spiritual aspect of the ministry. You know, that may sound pretty spiritual, but it's not very responsible. So it's we need balance here on these things. I'm not trying to say that financial is more important than the spiritual, but it is part of governance. And to ensure the legal, financial, and spiritual integrity of the ministry. That's part of this sort of repetitious, isn't it? So, yeah, an overall responsibility there. And to develop a strong board of learning members. This is now going to be the main point of this session together. And to promote and maintain strong ties to the supporting constituency. I've seen lists of 10. I've put these 8 up here. I don't know what your list is. Maybe you could somehow shrink it or subheading these things and combine it to 5. But hopefully this little exercise and reminder helps us to see that we have, as board members, a meaningful place to be. Admittedly, board membership may sometimes be a little bit like a substitute teacher. If a substitute teacher comes on board, he just tends not to have the full weight, and so he's just kind of keeping order, a placeholder for that day till the regular teacher comes back. And maybe board members can feel like they don't have the meaningful work for a spell, because the mission is determined, there's no crisis that we're managing, and so on. Or maybe it's a little bit, I could I'd liken it to being a firefighter, and so on. And yet, when we think about every time that we meet to plan for the next, to the future, think board members are thinking future things. Does anybody have a question or comment about this introduction? Then I'll go on. Governance is the essence of board work. Developing great board members. You know, board members that hold this organization in trust for the constituency or individuals or community really do have a responsibility, and it's legally and financially responsible for the ministry's well-being. These are weighty responsibilities, like serving the common good of the community and protecting the assets, as I've said. It would seem to me like those kinds of weighty responsibilities would warrant some rigorous training or orientation, don't you think? But the truth is that most times we just simply slip on the harness and learn on the job. And if you're in that position and you're kind of hungry for a little more, I hope that today, as we look at some things together, that we can get some ideas that might help us in our board work. I think that becoming effective in board work does not just happen, it must be a priority. I remember that one time when I joined a board, the administrator started to send out readings from a book on board responsibilities. And I thought, this is great. Some of the things that you know and some things that, oh, I didn't think about that. And then just the refresher of learning about these things, I thought was a wonderful plan. A little more on that later. But to be fully effective in decision making, board members need orientation. And this kind of orientation is like Abraham Lincoln said, never think someone is losing time by stopping to sharpen his axe. And this is scriptural, for Ecclesiastes says something similar. A dull axe requires great strength. Be wise and sharpen the blade. So developing all of this that I'm about to say, I think, is taking a little time, just like we are today, to sharpen the blade. So here are four tools that I suggest. This is now kind of the outline of the session today, sharpening the axe. The first is an introductory orientation. The second is a board agreement. The third is ongoing development. And the fourth is periodic evaluations. So, introductory orientation. Notice, the purpose of this meeting is to help new board members feel well informed about their role, how the organization operates, who is who, and what key accomplishments they can personally support, embrace, and publicize. So I think it's the best plan for the administrator and the board chair to invite new board members to an orientation meeting. Maybe it's going to take an hour or a couple, and it depends on the size of the organization, surely. And you just orient this board member so that he knows what to expect. I hope you like the little humor here that we have, that these fellows standing there, the one fellow is saying, hey, new guy, this is a no-board company. And the other fellow says, well, I haven't had the orientation yet. Sorry. So that's... Looks like a number of us are on one side or the other of this fence, so we will go on. So the chairman and administrators should take some time to give introduction to the work of the board, what key accomplishments that maybe these people can, the new board member can personally support and embrace, and then publicize, because board members are uniquely positioned to be representatives from the constituency to the board and from the board or organization back to the constituency. But mostly it's about helping new board members feel well informed about their role and how the organization operates and who's who in the organization. So here's a possible agenda. You could take this and say which ones apply to you, but if a new member comes on board, let's introduce the vision, mission, and values of the organization. Let's summarize the history and present state of the nonprofit. Let's provide copies of the past three or four board meeting minutes. Let's give them the most recent financial statements. Let's present and review the board manual, including the bylaws, and while we're there, let me suggest to you that if you've got the bylaws in a binder, which is a good place to put them, or some sort of a notebook, that annually it'd be a good idea to take a section and everybody read it and see if it's current and be reminded of what that says that the organization intends to do or is, and then update it if it needs to be updated. And then maybe if you divide it into 4 or 5 years, after every 5 years, you've gone through and tried to keep it current. You can do it at other times, too, when you know something's not current, but it's good to do those kinds of things in a board setting. And then to provide a list of the board members, including a brief bio, photo, and contact information, if that's useful. Then explain the expectations and responsibility of board service, including attendance and fundraising, how you do that, so that people know from the get-go. Discuss necessary attitudes and habits of effective boards. Present the agenda for the board meeting. Provide a list of upcoming meetings. Present the staff or organizational chart and lead a tour of the buildings and grounds. Obviously, some of these things are set for when you're from out of area, but depending on how local you are, you might not need some of these things. But this investment in new board members leaves them feeling valued and appreciated, which in turn prepares them to engage productively. And let me say that from the get-go, a new member should be recognized for his opinions, and his vote should count equally to the most experienced member. But obviously, a new guy is going to want to show proper respect to the organizational history as well. So just as we try to invest in bringing a new man on board, let's see this person as ready to go to work. I suggest that some of these items could probably be the administrator's role, and some of these items could be the chairman's role. You'll find it out. You'll figure out which ones you want to divide and do and how you want to. Sending this kind of thing out ahead of time would be good, too, like putting them in a binder and having the prospective board member prepared that way, help them to assimilate the information and come up with questions that they may have. Sharpening the axe. Second thing that I would like to suggest that we consider is a board contract. And I've got it in the back here as a sample, a board member agreement or contract. And so if any of this helps you, you may use this. But this is something that may be helpful for us as we join a board, to look this over and come to agreement about this, that I will do certain things and the organization will do several things for me. So just thinking about that, let me introduce a bit more back from this slide here. As a board member, I will present the organization's work and values to the constituency. That means that a board member will want to be visible in the community. He will look at this, at that as an as a community event, as an opportunity to be circling and making connections with people and be available for people to feed in to the work of the organization. Even if you're not wearing that name tag at that meeting, this is the kind of connection that a board member that may afford good connection for the board member, and to interpret the constituency's needs and values to the organization. So maybe I'm getting them backwards here, but it's a two-way thing. And attend at least 75% of board meetings. I think that might even be low. If a board member starts to feel bored or unneeded, and starts to miss, then we could say, hey, Joe, I noticed you were absent, and I'd just like to encourage you to be present, plugged in, and helping us along here. And to make a personal financial contribution at a level that's meaningful to me, to actively participate in the fundraising activities, if there are, to act in the best interests of the organization and excuse myself from discussions and votes where I have a conflict of interest. I don't know if you have those kinds of things, but what would be one of those conflicts of interest? Can you think of one? Yes, sir.
Where the organization leases property that's owned by a board member?
That's right. Good point. Anybody else? Yes.
Where a church that you're involved with kind of wants to go a different direction on an issue than the organization?
Uh-huh. So what do you do then?
That's a conflict of interest, I would say.
So then you identify the conflict of interest to the board and you say, I need to abstain from any direction here or voting here. Yes?
I'm here because I want you to tell me what you do then.
Yeah, that's right. That's what you do.
There you go.
That's what you do. Anybody else have another angle? Anything to add to what I just said? So it can also be as simple as this. As a parent, as a board member, I wear that hat. And as a parent, I wear another hat. Now, which one do I have on when I go into the room? Well, I put on the board member hat when I go into that room. But if an agenda item is going to have something to do with my son and discipline in the classroom or misbehavior or whatever, then I need to recognize that I've got the conflict of interest. And I need to identify it, and I need to say, please carry on without me, and if necessary, I'll absent myself so that you can deal with this issue. Yes.
You have a school teacher who's also a board member.
You have a school teacher that's also a board member.
I would identify that as a conflict of interest.
Well, it would certainly be a conflict of interest, and probably a sign of a very small church. But it's a tough one, because if you've got those conflicts of interest, you have to learn to deal with that and figure out which hat you're wearing and what at which time. And when you're a small organization getting started, there may be board members that are also staff members. There are also volunteers helping to get this thing off the ground and so on. And there's where you have to watch it too. Which hat am I wearing? So when you enter the board room, that's when you put on the board member hat. And you leave that hat back in the room when you exit the boardroom, because it's the board collectively that's the board that makes the decisions. So a key concept that we have to work. I think a lot of communities, a lot of churches, a lot of people, well-meaning people, are fuzzy on this thing. And so if somebody says to the administrator, I think this is what you ought to do, and he's a board member, then he can tend to say, the board said. No, the board didn't say. You could get into problems if you aren't careful. Now, if that board member wants to make some comment or has the opportunity, been asked to make a comment, he can say it, but he'd better be thinking, I'm talking personally. I'm not talking for the board. And the staff member needs to try to remember that too. So, wow. Yes, sir.
I don't want to wear this out, but if you have a board member who is, for whatever reason, unable to change hats, like he keeps all his hats on while he's in the board meeting, how can the rest of the board, do you have an idea or two on how the rest of the board can help that guy or deal with that guy? He's just unable to do what you just described.
Well, in the bylaws, and if you don't have the bylaws, get them. In the bylaws, there will be, this is now the end game thing, there should be a process to remove a board member that's crossways, that's not cooperating. Now, let me admit that it's not as easy as I'm just saying, because let's say that this is an ordained man that's sitting on the board, and he's got connections over there to the leadership team, or he's the lead pastor. And, you know, if push comes to shove, he plays the trump card and says, if this isn't going to work, why, the church is going to withdraw its support, and so on. That's just a killer for board action. And it's autocratic, it's, you know, dictatorial, it's power play, it's just not right. Like one fellow I asked, sat in one of my sessions one day, he said, what do you do when somebody tells you that God told me this is what we should do? And I said, you just tell him that God didn't tell me to the same thing. And he wasn't quite satisfied. He wanted to have some sort of a better, I think, wanted to have some sort of a better rejoinder, you know, the more Christian answer, I guess. And I'm thinking, look, that's a power play. That's not the way to discuss ideas and issues. And so, do I have a perfect answer for your situation and figure it out all over? I don't know that I do, but I will say this. If you have something that needs to be addressed, then start talking about it with the people that are involved and can hopefully do something about it. And I pray to God that you're not talking about a leader that's got his hands on the power controls so tight that it's going to be tough. I have helped in an advisory capacity on a board where there was consolidation of power. There was an administrator that was also board chairman, also staff pastor. And you talk about having it all, it was there. And it was not the easiest. Fortunately, the one that I'm talking about was retirement age, and so that kind of helped. But it can be a problem. We must have hit something.
Did he agree on your definition of retirement age?
It wasn't all easy because, you know, it's easy when you get to this age. I guess I'm getting close. It's easy to talk in generalities and future and not really get something pulled off. But, yeah, it worked out. Praise the Lord. It worked out. So work with those. I know of another situation that involved a nonprofit. I better watch my time, probably. And yet, when you and I get to talking about real-life situations, it is instructive to learn. There was a young administrator hired, and there was a certain issue that was being pushed by a ministerial rep, and he started to threaten that their conference isn't going to support this organization, you know, probably withhold personnel coming and whatever all, or advise not to and such, if this administrator is retained. And so it was obvious that this was weight throwing, pushing, forcing, you've got to see it my way. And so the board chairman retired or offered his resignation, and a new board chair was elected, and he went around. This is unusual. I support what he did, but really you should have the board together to make it official. But he went around and talked to every board member and asked him, do you personally support this administrator? And he got around the circle, and he had strong support, I think unanimous, if I remember the story right. And so then when they sat together in the board meeting, they identified that the board is together, except for this advisory council person, and made their decision to retain the administrator. And as I know the story, it was a relief to the organization, and the man threatening to withdraw didn't immediately, at least. I think it was power play and bluffing that was going on, but I don't have all of the rest of the story, like for years later, as far as that's concerned. So here we have the board agreement. So participating in making decisions on issues and policies and work with staff and board as partners to achieve our goals. These are things that the board agreement would ask of a new board member or all board members. And then the organization will send quarterly financial reports and an update of organizational activities that allow me to meet the prudent person standard of the law and permit me to discuss with the administrator and board chairman the organization's programs, goals, activities, and status. And thirdly, to respond in a straightforward way to questions that I feel are necessary to carry out fiscal, legal, and moral responsibilities to this organization. And fourthly, offer me opportunities for professional development as a board member. So the board agreement is one tool that I would, the second tool that I would suggest that we use or consider to use in some form for sharpening the axe. Then ongoing development. This one is something that I have been experiencing and really do enjoy. You can set this up for 3 years or 4 years or 5 years or what. You can select yourself a text, like maybe Doing Good Better by Stays, and make... So if you do this, set up... Let's come back to this one here. So you get permission from the publisher to scan and email copyrighted works that will need to be secured. This permission needs to be secured from the publisher. And you purchase the number of books for the board size and put them on the shelf, but secure from them the permission to make proper notation, to copy electronically, and email out to the board monthly about, a 20-minute read, so that it's not laborious, but it is something that helps board members think again about board issues and responsibilities. And then after the email series is completed, the books should be given to each board member for future reference. The attached file, you could also put this on with the email. The attached file is for your personal use only. Do not share, forward, or post this content without permission from the publisher. So it's a permission that's been given to your organization to stay on board with it. Now, there are other ways to do this kind of thing. You could buy these copies and hand them out to the board and then agree that next time we're going to each read this chapter and come to the board and discuss it. Well, that takes more board time, so this one is something that can kind of happen alongside, and it's going to be only as good as the people participating in it, for that matter. The way we do it on the board that I'm serving on, we invite every board member to make his comments, a sentence or two, to say that I really appreciated this point or that point, and so on. So back again to the suggestions page. I guess you have them on your handout as well. These are some, I think these are two of the better books on board responsibilities that are out there. Well, maybe three. And then there are other ideas there that you might consider. And if you've got a mission focus, put those kinds of readings in there, or any educational focus or whatever that you might want to put on there. Organizational leadership and so on are ideas that you might want to consider. Is there any question about ongoing development? How many minutes do I have left?
About 15.
Great. And then finally, something, a subject that I'm hopeful that you don't just throw out, but I'm sure is kind of, oh, how do I do this, and do we really have to do this? So let me acknowledge some of the challenge in it as I bring it up, but periodic evaluations is something that I think can be a tool to help us refresh, help us improve. So evaluations are most easily done using questionnaires that you hand out or interviews with relevant, clear questions for board improvement. So some of the questionnaires would be, how am I doing personally? How am I contributing? Am I doing my part in this and this? Some of the questionnaires would be, how are we doing as a team? And it could be also, how did the meeting go? So if you'll look back on some of the samples that I gave you again in the back, you will notice that I have here a board of directors full board evaluation. So it's not asking about any individual, it's asking for an evaluation of how's the board actually doing together. And this is for XYZ Ministry. And there's two pages here. So we've got the activities of the board, we've got mission and purpose, governance, board meetings, and board membership. I think I might have gotten these ideas for this basically from World Vision. And then there's another self-evaluation form that comes next that we could hand out. This time maybe we'll say, so maybe 1 year, this is possibly an annual kind of thing. So 1 year, the board members all fill out this one and turn it in for tabulation and discussion. And then maybe the next year, we self-evaluate. Each one of us fills this out and dates it. And then there could be another year that we have a board member evaluation form. Well, we would use this one for a certain person. And here, when I saw this used or helped use this, I liked this to be done at a board retreat. So there's a little more time than just the normal board meeting. And handed this out, let's say I would say evaluation of John Yoder. And then I'd hand it to two of his co-board members and to one of the administrative team. So there was a pool of three that gave the evaluations on John Yoder and then compiled it so that it's anonymous and had an interview with John Yoder. And this is a good exercise. And we're trying to learn, trying to improve our serve, right? There's value in this. But then the final one that I have here is a sample for a board meeting evaluation form. So it's asking questions about, were the board report and agenda set out on time and in an acceptable form? So board by board report, I mean anything that the administration has developed to present to the board and as a report. And how well did the chairman keep the group goal-oriented? And how well did the group stay goal-directed? And how did the chair manage time, and so on? Practical questions that are there. So these self-assessment tools allow nonprofit boards to examine their performance and improve the way they go about their work. In addition to allowing boards to reflect on how well they're carrying out individual responsibilities, self-assessment helps boards focus on significant elements of their work, such as setting direction, oversight, fundraising, and ministry outreach. Self-assessments can shake boards out of micromanaging the organization's work and redirect their focus to governance issues. It can lead to greater engagement by its members and higher performance as a board. While many rely on input from their own members, some boards ask outside experts to assess their performance. Others use online self-assessments for quicker results and ensured confidentiality. Whatever the method, relevant and clear questions are vitally imperative, and boards use the feedback for individual and corporate development. It's not really that we're after a report card. It's for the purpose of sharpening our axe and developing our tools. So I'm wondering, do you have any question about this?
You referenced the board retreat. Talk to me a little bit about board retreat. What does it look like? You go through some of these things, or do you have time for that?
Sure, I think we do. I mean, I don't know what the next question is, but yes. A board retreat, usually a board, if there's something that's kind of on deck that the board ought to be exploring, future plans, refreshing of the vision, mission, values. If a chairman and administration realize that there's something like that that could be set aside a little specially. So let's say that your organization has a meeting all day Friday or Thursday night and Friday. It's kind of a regular meeting. And then you decide to just extend it now for a weekend. And so you've got Saturday and maybe Sunday morning yet that you are together. And you just take the time to, yes, social life is part of it too, but you take some time to address the issue, to look at it together, to explore and whatever. So that's what I'm talking about. And that maybe is something that a board could consider, especially if members are non-local. Well, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But for non-local members, it provides a chance to socialize that has some value. But their socialize locally could be good too, so it may not be dogmatic about that. So maybe every 3 or 4 years, 5 years, it could be that that would be a blessing for your board. Any other questions? Yes?
How do you determine a board member life cycle? Can you talk a little bit about what's healthy, unhealthy?
Are you talking about the length of term?
Right, length of term.
Yeah. Well, boards may have 3-year terms or 4-year terms or 5-year terms. So some of that's probably already set. Maybe it should be in the bylaws if you've got that. And so I think that it's reasonable to assume that a break is good after, say, 10 years, 10 or 12. So if you want to set it up that at 9 or 10 or 12 years, depending on the length of your terms and how it fits together, you could say that we ask you to serve for the first term, and then it's renewable by mutual agreement. It's not automatic, but it's mutual agreement there. But then after 10 or 12 years, to have a time off so that there's just kind of a reset built in. It's a forced reset. And it's possible that after a year off or 5 years off that somebody could be asked to return to the board, but if you've got a situation where it's annual elections by the congregation or something, that changes the picture. But I'm thinking about some of these constituent boards where the boards have some are active in the process of nomination and recruitment.
Thank you.
Yes.
Do you have any words or ideas for transitioning boards to the next generation so that it's not, like, handed off extremely abruptly? Like,
Yeah. I think that's one of the factors that a board should consider, especially if the board is refreshing itself. You'd give attention to geography, sometimes constituency. You'd give attention to ages and then skills and training. It'd be great to have an accountant or two on the board, depending on the size, you know, when I say two. And somebody with a legal training would be great to have that kind of a person on a lot of these boards. So, yeah, I'm back to your question. I think a board should be intentional about some diversity there.
The idea of having 10 years and you're out kind of helps that problem.
It can, yeah. Yep. Yeah. So take these ideas and shake them, make them work for you, reject them, and God bless you in your work.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.